Live from the KSRM studios on K Beach Road, it's time for the Talk of the Kenai. Join the conversation now by calling 283-5811.
The opinions expressed on this program are not necessarily those of KSRM management, staff, or sponsors, but are those of the host and callers only.
Now, here's your host, Bob Byrd.
Find a wheel and it goes round, round, round as it skims along with a happy sound as it goes along the ground, ground, ground till it leads you to the one you love. Then your love will hold you round, round, round in your heart's a song with a brand new sound and your head go spinning round, 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 'cause you found what you've been dreaming of. In the night you see the oval moon going round and round in tune, and the ball of sun in the day makes a girl and boy wanna say, find the ring,
find the ring,
and put it round, 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 and with ties so strong, the two hearts are bound, put it on, the one you found, 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 for you know that this is really love. Find a wee, and it goes round, 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 as it skims along, with a happy sound as it goes, along the ground, 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 till it leads you to the one you love. Then your love, you'll hold a round, 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 in your heart's a song, with a brand new sound, and your head go spinning round, 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 'cause you found what you've been dreaming of. In the night you see the over moon going round and round in two, and the ball of sun in the day makes a girl and boy wanna say, find the ring and put it round, 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 and with ties so strong your two hearts are bound, put it on, the one you found, 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 for you know that this is really love. Find the ring, put it on, for you know that this is really love.
The last number one song that Perry Como ever charted, Round, Round, Round. What a beautiful song, beautiful lyrics, and from 1957, Perry Como. What a great song. He had other charts, that hits that hit the charts, but this one was his last that went to number one. How about that? It's a really profound lyrics. Okay. Well, today we're going to have a presidential candidate as our guest at 3:15. And just to let you know, we are preempting all of our commercials and even the news at the bottom of the hour. So we will have Robert F. Kennedy Jr. on for a full 45 minutes nonstop, all right, without those commercial breaks that, of course, we are most grateful for. That is what brings us, of course, AM and FM radio. It's a great magic, the invention of the radio. Guglielmo Marconi, of course, an Italian who invented the radio. So we'll cover the 10-day forecast as we usually do, and then we'll dial up Mr. Kennedy here while we do play our one set of commercials at around 3:15. So you want to call your friends and neighbors, give them a call. Tell them to go to RadioKenai.com and click on KSRM. Now, there's six studios in our station. And, of course, we've got the St. Jude Children's Hospital Marathon going on as well. So make sure you pick KSRM. You go to the top right, top left of the website and pick KSRM where it says Listen Live Online. If you're in the lower 48, it is, there's about a five-second delay, but you won't know that, okay? Insofar as questions for Mr. Kennedy, I will take emailed questions. I may or may not read them simply because maybe I've already got them along the line of questions that we have already served him. And I don't like, and I never ambush my guests with surprise questions. Some of the questions are going to be difficult for him. We won't agree on much, but we will agree on a lot. All right, how about that? Most people would probably feel the same way that listen to this show. So go to www.radiokenai.com and click KSRM. In the meantime, yesterday, Thursday, is a high of 37, low of 26. We had a low last night of, well, only 31, and that's what the current temperature. No, the low is 26, okay? And the current temperature, 31, is the high. Yeah, I still got out with my snowmobile today with my mutt. Boy, he sure loves that exercise. All right, tomorrow, Friday, we're expecting a low tonight of about 26. A high tomorrow, about 37. AM clouds, PM sun. Saturday, mostly sunny, 39 and 29. Sunday will be cloudy, 39 and 25. Monday, 37 and 23 with mostly cloudy skies. Tuesday, mostly cloudy with 29 and 19. How about that? That's like April 9th, 29 and 19. I've seen below zero this time of year. We have in the past. Wednesday will be 33 and 21 with mostly cloudy skies. A week from today, 38 and 27, partly cloudy. We're hardly going to hit 40 anywhere. Week from tomorrow, 39 and 30. And a week from Saturday, maybe it'll get up to 41. Oh, wow. That's not much to go by when you want to celebrate springtime in Alaska, where it's often 40 below. All right, we'll take a break right now. When we come back, I hope we'll have RFK on the line. This is KSRM, the talk of the Kenai, and it is 31 degrees on the one.
Radio 92. Radio 92.
Hello, I'm Marty Hansen, owner and manager of Eyewear Express. Have you ever bought new glasses for your little darling and they're lost or twisted into a figure eight before you even get home or take that first picture? Well, if you got them at Eyewear Express, we'll replace the frame for free. Let me say that again. If they lose or break the frame, we'll replace it for free. So relax and expect the best from Eyewear Express in the Peninsula Center Mall, Soldotna, 260-9199.
Ladies, are you ready to prioritize your health and well-being? Central Peninsula Hospital is inviting you to the Women and Babies Health Fair on April 13th from 9 a.m. to 1 p.m. at the CPH River Tower. We have 30 local vendors offering valuable health information and exciting retail options. Take advantage of discounted labs, same-day mammograms, and don't miss out on the chance to win amazing giveaways and prizes. Mark your calendars and visit cpgh.org for more information. See you there.
Kenai Peninsula Fair fundraiser April 6th. Their annual Celebrity Waiter event is one of the most fun fundraisers of the year. Tickets are $50 single, $75 couple, live auction, silent auction, dessert auction, and tip competition for the title of head waiter. This year's celebrity waiters include Steve Sturman, Lisa Parker, Clayton Holland, Kelly Cooper, and more. Find tickets, KenaiPeninsulaFair.com.
Brought to you by Laura McGinnis, Readout Keller Williams, reminding you to be the change you wish to see in our community.
Nice sweatshirt. Hey, where could I get one?
Sweet beanie. Pretty nice.
That one looks pretty good.
Awesome merchandise for the KSRM Radio Group is now available. Name brand shirts, hoodies, and beanies printed locally by Walden Bros. There are designs for each station, including the limited edition 40th anniversary shirt from Q100 The Point. Just head to RadioKenai.com and click on Merch to browse the selection. And thanks to Walden Bros for help in updating your wardrobe. Merch for the KSRM Radio Group is now available at RadioKenai.com. Just click on Merch.
Want a man for president who's seasoned through and through, but not so doggone seasoned that he won't try something new. A man who's old enough to know
and young enough to do.
Well, it's up to you, it's up to you,
it's strictly up to you.
Well, it's Kennedy, 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 Kennedy.
Well, that's the 1960 television commercial for John F. Kennedy for president, and his nephew is on the line right now, Robert F. Kennedy Jr. Thanks for joining us on the top Talk of the Kenai.
Bob, thank you so much for having me.
Well, Alaska is a long ways from Washington, D.C. It's about 5,000 miles. And but I believe you are on the West Coast right now. And so you're only an hour ahead of us. So, Mr.
No, I'm in Miami today, but I live now. I moved to the West Coast in 2014. I married. My base was always the East Coast, Massachusetts and New York. I married an actress, Cheryl Hines, in 2014, and then moved to the West Coast because she couldn't move, and I couldn't either, but I ended up losing that argument. And I moved with my six kids to California. I spent a lot of time in Alaska, including in the Kenai, and I've, a lot in Homer. We have a water keeper up there, the cook inlet keeper, and we have a bunch of other projects in Alaska that, you know, I've worked on. So I've been all over Alaska. I've been fishing up in the Arctic National Wildlife Refuge. I've been fishing and camping and hunting up in the Petroleum Reserve, and all over the state. I've hiked in the Brooks Range a lot, and I love Alaska. It's one of my favorite places in the world to be.
Well, I think you have me beat. I have not hiked the Brooks Range. I've crossed it two or three times, but it's a great thought that you know something about our state, because so many people do not, and they try to dictate policy to us. And I want to thank you for coming to the Kenai Peninsula as well.
Now, yeah, I brought my kids up there, and we went during the salmon season to see the big grizzly bears. So it was very, very, I had a really exciting day.
Well, if you saw some grizzly bears at this time of year, about 7 or 8 years ago, not far from this studio, I have a close friend who, with his family, while they're bird watching, had a brown bear attack him. And it was a very old bear. It was partially blind, and he actually wrestled it to a standstill. So just to let you know, we do have bears and moose around here that sometimes we have to be very cautious about. Mr. Kennedy, just to let you know, we are not going to have any commercial or news breaks in your honor. We're going to take you straight up to the top of the hour, and I wanted you to know that. So we are looking to consider, with the Alaskan Independence Party, of which I'm the chairman, of putting you on the ballot, as we have for the Constitution Party in previous presidential cycles. And I know that you have earned a lot of respect for your stand, not only during COVID, but also criticisms of the current presidency. The first thing I want to ask you, however, will be about an Alaskan issue, and I presume your staff has familiarized with you our concern that at our statehood vote in 1958, the UN Charter, Section 73, regarding non-self-governing territories, of which Alaska and Hawaii were considered part of that NSGT designation, the federal government fulfilled its obligations with the Philippines and Guam and Puerto Rico and I believe the Virgin Islands, but not with Alaska and Hawaii. I doubt that you had ever heard of that. I can't get the legislature to give any serious consideration to it, but Walter Hickel did when he was governor here. I want to ask you if you would investigate this and consider the fact that Alaska and Hawaii perhaps were not given what they were entitled to. Have you familiarized yourself with that issue?
Oh, I'm not that familiar. I mean, all I would tell you is that I think that federal government should keep its word, that it should keep its contracts, that it should give full faith and credit. It wants people to give it full faith and credit. It needs to keep its words about the commitments it makes. So, you know, I would, if there's a commitment the federal government made or an obligation that it had that it didn't live up to, I would want to know about it. And I'd want to try to figure out how to make that right.
Thank you. You have a list of questions that we provided for you, but the first thing I will ask is about your running mate and the fact that Alaska's economic crisis is unquestionably linked to the lockup of our state's natural resources. And you have a reputation as an environmental lawyer and now a running mate who would reflect that. But as president, would you work at all to unthaw federal control of Alaska's lands?
Well, I would, I want to talk to you about it and work with you on it and hear your concerns on it. Like, I mean, I can tell you some kind of basic principles that I've worked on for many years. Well, one is, I have been, and you might not want to hear this, but I've been very active about preserving the Arctic National Wildlife Refuge from oil development. And to me, it's the American Serengeti. There's 200,000 caribou up there. There's small herds of muskox, but 200 bird species that use it. I've spent a lot of time hunting up there, fishing up there, hiking, and it's an extraordinary wilderness. And I do believe there are parts of our country, like the Grand Canyon, like Yosemite Park, like Yellowstone, that we shouldn't develop, and that unless there's some critical existential need to do so. So in terms of the Arctic National Wildlife Refuge, my inclination would be to preserve it. In terms of Alaska is a state that has some of the highest cost of living of any place in the United States. It's got high unemployment, particularly with the native groups, a lot of very, very bad poverty issues. And part of that, you can say is going to be alleviated by greater oil development or mineral development. My experience with oil and mineral development is that it doesn't really help develop local economies. And, my inclination is to look for a diverse energy generation sources and to do everything that we can to use the resources that are exploited in Alaska to, I'm getting an echo on the line a little bit, Bob, so I don't know if that's coming through.
That's coming through loud and clear, Mr. Kennedy. That's great. And I appreciate your forthright answer. I would ask if you are aware that the caribou herd at the Prudhoe Bay facility was predicted to crash because of that development. Of course, it has not done that. In fact, there are times, it's been 40 years now, 50 years, that the caribou herd population goes up and down, that with absolutely no impact from the development there. And of course, the ANWR facility, if it was ever developed, would be a tiny portion of the ANWR, not where the south slope of the Brooks Range is, or even in the Serengeti tundra, but it would be on the coastal islands offshore mostly. I don't know if you were aware of that fact about the caribou at Prudhoe Bay, or where the oil drilling is purported to be placed in ANWR.
Yeah, I am, and I've been to Prudhoe Bay. I've been to the Petroleum Reserve as well, and I've seen that. And there are other resources there too, including the bird species. So, I'm not against oil development. I'm not against domestic oil development in our country. In fact, I think most countries, that our country has better development rules and regulations than most countries. So if we want to preserve the environment and we have to drill for oil, that it's that in some cases you can make the argument that it's better to do it here than elsewhere. And what I want to make sure with my energy policy is that the oil and gas reserves that we have in this country, that we, to the extent we can, we use them in this country to lower the cost of manufacturing. And that, you know, it's not really ever a good long-term economic choice simply to take resources and export them. That's kind of a colonial model, raw resources and export them. That is a colonial model, and I'd rather do an economic model that is value-added, where we can use the cheap energy that we have in this country to create a manufacturing base that can compete against the manufacturing bases in Europe and the rest of the world, so that we can start restoring our industrial base and restore the American middle class.
Thank you. I'll move to the crisis at the southern border, which most people believe is a contrived crisis done by the policy of the current administration. And what would you do regarding this crisis at the southern border?
I will close the border immediately. There's, you know, I've been to the border. I've spent a lot of time now at the border. I spent 3 days in south of Yuma on the border there, meeting with law enforcement, local law enforcement, meeting with the Border Patrol, meeting with local public officials, ranchers, hospital officials, the rape center officials. I saw what's happening at the border. It's absolutely insane. You know, I watched when I arrived there, I got there around 2 o'clock in the morning to the wall, and I watched 300 people come across between 2 o'clock and 4 a.m. Only two of those families were Latin American. There was one Peruvian, one Colombian. The first 110 people who came over were all young men of military age from West Africa. They were coming on buses of 55 people each, and the buses were owned by the Sinaloan drug cartel. And everybody who came across knew exactly what was going to happen to them, because they're answering advertisements that the drug cartels are putting on YouTube and TikTok in Europe, Africa, and Asia, saying, we will get you into the United States. Here's what you do, and you pay $10,000 to $15,000, depending on where you come in, and the cartel guarantees you a passage into the United States. The second 110 people that came across were almost all from Asia. They were from China, Tibet, Kazakhstan, Afghanistan, Uzbekistan, Nepal, Bangladesh, India. And as I said, every one of them, I interviewed all of them. They all said they're here to get jobs. Only the two Latin American ones had asylum claims. So they're all coming in illegally. The Border Patrol is completely demoralized. They're not allowed to keep people out. They're not allowed to send them back. Their job is now just to process them. They fingerprint them. If they have a criminal record, then they deter them. But if they don't have a criminal record, they bring them to the Yuma airport, and they put them on an airplane to any destination they choose in the United States. They give them an asylum court date that is 7 years in the future. They put them on an airport to any destination in the United States, and if they don't have the money to pay for that ticket, which many of them don't because they've been robbed by the drug cartel before coming in, then the Border Patrol buys the ticket and gets reimbursement from FEMA. And they have between 7 and 9 million people have come across that way. It's absolutely insane.
Mr. Kennedy, I want to give you a chance. I want to give you a chance to catch your breath there, because you've answered that question very thoroughly. And I'm going to simply ask you, these would be considered treasonable offenses when you're not protecting your own border. And the reaction from Texas, of course, has been well known. And it's not only a threat to our security, it's a threat to our national unity. And because when the states have to take over and then be criticized for trying to defend their own territory, we've got a unification problem, I would say. So I want to thank you for your answer on that. And again, just to give you a chance, if you're taking a drink of water or anything like that, because we are going without any commercials or news breaks. Our guest is Robert F. Kennedy Jr., candidate for president of the United States. He needs no introduction. Mr. Kennedy, I laughed when I saw the reaction of the New Republic regarding your interview, your recent interview on CNN, where they said, gee, freedom of speech doesn't apply to Kennedy's outlandish claims regarding vaccines and COVID and all these other things. It's just an amazing thing how they can interpret the First Amendment for us, I would say. Don't you think so?
Yeah, it is extraordinary what's happened to the liberal mind that, you know, they think that it's okay for the government to censor. And by the way, you know, I was being censored because of, you know, I was challenging government policies on the lockdowns. I was challenging government policies on masks, on the school closures, the lockdown, 3.3 million American businesses with no due process, no just compensation, no scientific citation, no public hearings, no notice and comment rulemaking, no environmental impact statements. They just said, close them all down. The social distancing, which even Anthony Fauci under oath a month ago said that, yeah, we just took that out of thin air. It had no scientific basis for it, and yet we were all told to comply. And to say that anybody, that it's okay to censor people who complain about or who question those policies is, it's not consistent with the First Amendment of the Constitution that in this country was built on the idea that our citizens ought to be able to criticize government officials and government policies. And what the New Republic is now saying is, oh, that doesn't count in certain areas. But, you know, the censorship that's taking place now is not just about public health issues. It's about Ukraine. It's about Hunter Biden's laptops. It's about all these issues that the government does not want the public talking about. And once you give a government authority to silence its critics, it has a license for any sort of atrocity. And, you know, you and I saw that during COVID. As soon as they realized that they could silence us, they could shut people up, and that we were going to put up with it, we were going to accept the censorship, they then went after freedom of worship, which is also in the First Amendment. They closed every church in our country for a year with no scientific citation. Then they went after freedom of assembly, also in the First Amendment. They made a social distance without any scientific citation or public hearing. They then went after the Fifth Amendment right to private property. They closed every business without due process, without just compensation, just shut them down. They then went after the Seventh Amendment, right to jury trial. The Seventh Amendment, Bob, says that no American shall be denied the right of a trial before a jury of his peers in cases or controversies exceeding $25 in value.
Not only that, but a speedy and public trial is also required. And, of course, the January 6th defendants have had a grotesque violation of that.
Well, they, you know, during COVID, they just said there's whole classes of industry that no matter how egregious their behavior, no matter how negligent they are, no matter how grievous your injury, no matter how, you know, toxic the ingredients of their products, you can't sue them. Oh, and, you know, people were terribly hurt and killed, and they have no recourse. There are people who are paralyzed with POTS, with all these other injuries, and they have absolutely no recourse because there's entire class of industry, including the entire pharmaceutical industry, the hospital industry, and you know, doctors, et cetera, who were given liability shields in violation of the Seventh Amendment right. So, you know, and then, they, of course, the Fourth Amendment, which guarantees freedom from unwarranted searches and seizures, you know, that was all thrown out with the track and trace.
There is much, Mr. Kennedy. I'm going to. You have a list of our questions, and I want to thank you. You're practically, you know, hardly drawing breath, and I want to compliment you for that. I do have one thing that's not on the list. Just yesterday, and I think you'll be interested in this. Yesterday, we had Dr. Douglas Frank, who's being considered for a Nobel Prize with his work in molecular science. He is crisscrossing the country talking about election integrity and how the various machines that were basically given to every state in the union, they're not all just Dominion machines, how they talk to cell towers. They talk to cell towers, and then that permits the whoever's doing the vote harvesting and mail-in ballots, it permits them to know what the shortfall is and to make up for that. I don't know if you've heard that. I don't know if you've heard of Dr. Douglas Frank, but he's crisscrossing America. And do you have any comments on the election integrity, which I presume you know there's a huge loss of confidence in that?
Yeah, I mean, you know, what I say to people about that is that I wrote an award-winning article for Rolling Stone in 2004 about the potential for hacking the Diebold machines, which were one of the voting machines that were used in Pennsylvania and Ohio and some other states during 2004. And what I said then is, you know, it's good to have machine counting systems. We can do that. You should always have a paper ballot as well as a backup system and a very, very low threshold for demanding a recount, because electronic systems are hackable. No matter what people say, you're going to be able to hack them. And we need a way, particularly with AI and all these, you know, everything can be hacked. We need a paper ballot that can be easily counted, and a low threshold, a low trigger for to recognize demand standard recount. And you know, if we don't have that, people are going to continue to question our voting system. We're the world's exemplary democracy. There's an entire city, Las Vegas, that's built upon the ability for industry to create machines that can count right and never get it wrong, slot machines, et cetera. We have ATMs on every block that never give you more money than you ask for. So we ought to be able to create a voting machine that works, but we always need paper ballots. You need to have that on the side, because you have to presume that anything can be hacked, and we want everybody to trust the system.
And that's not the case, certainly here in Alaska, and I presume in your travels, you've learned that in most areas of the country. Now I'm going to go to the Dobbs decision, which ended Roe versus Wade and returned the issue to the states where it was before 1973. However, at the State of the Union message, Biden was calling for the institution of the precepts of Roe into federal law. Now, if you were president and this landed on your desk somehow, would you veto or sign a restoration of Roe versus Wade as federal statutory law?
Here's what my position is, Bob, and I know I'm different than you on this. I come from a family that was split on pro-life and pro-choice. And so I grew up with family members who I loved, who I talked to, who I respected, who didn't feel the same way about it as me. I went back and forth throughout my life on this issue. I've been, for the past 15 years, I've been the premier advocate in the country for medical freedom and for bodily autonomy. So I don't believe the government or any government bureaucrat ought to be able to tell people what to do with their bodies. Now, at the same time, I think that every abortion is a tragedy, and I think that we as a nation should not have policies that corral women into a single choice, which is what we have now, which is abortion. If they have a child, I want to make sure that women, particularly women, and no woman in America makes a choice to terminate a pregnancy because she does not have the money to raise that child. And we put all of this money, you know, 85% of abortions in our country now are among black women. The fertility clinics are in the white neighborhoods. The abortion clinics are in the black neighborhoods. And I've been greatly influenced by a woman called Angela Stanton King. She's part of Martin Luther King's extended family, and she's worked on this issue for many years. And she has a house called Angie's House, which takes care of young mothers who were being directed to abortion because they could not afford their babies. And they provide services so that these young mothers can bring those babies to term. And I don't think a woman in our country should ever decide to terminate pregnancy because of financial considerations.
So
I think the government...
I want to get you back. It's hypothetical, of course. If you are president and you do get a statute that would reinstitute Roe versus Wade as a federal statute, would you sign it or veto it and keep it with the states?
I would sign a federal law that guaranteed women have a right to choose. I think women should make the choice. I don't think government should make the choice.
All right, that answers the question. Thank you. I wanted to talk about, you talked about the high cost of living in Alaska, and I would call your attention to the Jones Act. Ernest Greening was a former governor of Alaska and a United States senator, and he gave a tremendous speech in 1955 before our constitutional convention held in Fairbanks as they drew up a constitution before statehood. And he gave a speech that specifically listed chapter and verse of basic colonialism in Alaska. In fact, his speech is entitled "Let Us End American Colonialism." He specifically cited the Jones Act, which we thought statehood would end. But the Jones Act is still in force. It still artificially jacks up the cost of living in almost all products here in Alaska. People who are, in fact, longshoremen and involved in the maritime industry understand that that might be very well applicable to the lower 48, but Alaska is a bit different because we are, in a way, overseas, and we need a cheaper way to get our goods and services here. So I just want to ask you about the Jones Act, presuming that you're fully aware of that it requires that we use American-flagged ships to deliver goods and services to Alaska.
Yeah, I mean, I would consider an exemption of the Jones Act in Alaska. I would keep the Jones Act in place because I think it's a national security issue. And it's important that we have a shipbuilding industry in the country, in our country. And that is one of the incentives that keeps shipbuilding and a lot of jobs in the United States. But it has a devastating effect on Alaska, which already has one of the three highest costs of living in the United States. And, you know, Puerto Rico has some of the same issues. So I would look at an exemption for Alaska and Puerto Rico, and I would look very favorably on that. I think Alaska is in a crisis now with its cost of living, and, you know, Alaska has a lot of issues with the federal government that, you know, that is partially responsible for some of the poverty in Alaska. And I think we ought to do everything that we can to make it up to them, to boost the economy and to save costs.
Thank you. I had a question given to me by one of my board members, and it is in regards to digital currency. There are situations now, I think I read just this week, where a person's trying to enter a national park can't use cash. The government's own money will not be accepted by the government. The nefarious potential for digital currency, I would ask if you recognize that and what you might do as president.
Yeah, I will make sure when I'm president that there is no central bank digital currency. It's a way of controlling the public And, you know, I saw this in Ottawa during the COVID. I really got enlightened by what happened in Canada during COVID, where you had a trucker strike, where truckers drove from all across Canada, from BC, from Alberta, and they made a convoy. They ended up in Alaska. And they, you know, the truckers in Canada are very diverse. They're Asian, African descent, white. They're from every social economic group in Canada. They demonstrate, and they were demonstrating for something that we take for granted in the United States, which is freedom of assembly, freedom of petition. They didn't like the mandates and the impacts that was having on their industry. And they wanted to protest to their government, which is a right that we all assume we have. They went to Ottawa. Justin Trudeau condemned them as right-wing. If you look at the videos, Bob, it looks like Woodstock. These people were taking care of each other. They were giving out bottled water or sandwiches to homeless people. They were dancing in the street. They were having bands. They were hugging each other, a completely diverse crowd. And all they wanted to do was to make known to the government that they didn't like these mandates. Well, the Trudeau administration used facial recognition systems, and they got license plate numbers, and they canceled the bank accounts for all these truckers. So they couldn't pay their mortgages, they couldn't pay their children's education, they couldn't buy food for their family. One of the truckers told me that he was going to jail because he couldn't pay his alimony. He was under court order to pay alimony, and he couldn't access his money. He couldn't buy fuel for their trucks. And it occurred to me then that if government has the capacity to shut down your bank accounts, they have the capacity to silence everybody. And transactional freedom is as important as the First Amendment, as freedom of expression. If you can express yourself, then the government, without charging you with a crime, without convicting you, just can shut down your bank account, then they can turn us all into slaves. And that's what central bank digital currencies are about. This is exactly what they do in China. Everybody gets a social credit score. And if you are spotted on a mask day, for example, and your mask is below your nose, or you're too close to your girlfriend on a social distancing and you're spotted by these facial recognition systems that are ubiquitous everywhere in China, you then have drops in your social credit score, and they have programmable currency so that at some point you'll be told your credit card in China is your face. Everybody's face is a credit card. You're told that your credit cards will not work except in a grocery store within, you know, a certain radius of your house. But you can't buy gasoline. You can't buy a plane ticket. You can't buy a bus ticket. You can't go out to a theater. You're basically under house arrest. And they can do it all with no trial.
Mr. Kennedy,
I
want to give you a break now because you have answered that question very forthrightly and very emphatically. So thank you on that. And you're bringing up things that I have a close friend who calls this show almost every day, and she speaks Chinese. She went over there to be an artist, and she has been telling me this because she has connections there, and she's been telling me everything you just recalled. So thank you very much. Alaska, and this is, again, I'm not expecting you to know or understand this, but when we were given what's called the statehood compact, we were promised a 90-10 resource split of natural resources that were on federal lands. This was because it was recognized in the late 50s that Alaska needed to have the revenue preponderantly given to the state for the cost of government. And right now we are in a budget crisis. One of the reasons is because we cannot develop our resources on federal lands, and ANWR is a prime example. But I want you to realize that our congressional delegation, without asking the people of Alaska to vote on it, compromised our 90-10 split down to 50-50. Now, this was a situation where the in the lower 48, it's a 50-50 split between the federal government and the states, but that goes into a reclamation fund, as I understand. But, of course, we're outside of that. And Alaska is something like 97% rated as wetlands, so we don't need to restore our wetlands. So the 90-10 split was arbitrarily, and I would argue illegally, reduced to 50-50. When Trump was president, he was going to open ANWR on the 50-50 basis. What I'm eager to do is to call the federal government out, and we have our own congressional delegation to blame on this, and that has to be submitted to the people of Alaska because it was part of our statehood compact, and it's, again, another violation that was done without consultation of the people. I don't know if you are aware of this unique part of our statehood compact, but that is, I'd like your comments on that.
Yeah, I mean, I think the federal government ought to keep its obligation. But if the obligation was 90-10 and it was unlawfully waived by a congressional delegation without consultation, I think that, you know, the United States government needs to keep its word. It needs to tell the truth to people, and that's what I will do as president, and it needs to keep its word.
All right. I'm going to ask you about the there's EVs. It's a federal mandate, supposedly, I believe, by 2035. But without the mineral resource extraction that are needed for the development of more electrical energy, we're not going to be able to produce the kind of infrastructure that is being called for, whether it's wind power, solar power, and electrical power. So we have... We have many resources, including a gigantic copper mine that is not being developed because of the green lobby. So it's almost like a conundrum for the green lobby to say, yes, we need more electrical power, but we're not going to dig to get the copper that's obviously necessary to do that. Any comments?
Well, you know, I would have to look at a case-by-case basis, Bob, about the particular mines. You know, rare earth mining is not just a hole in the ground. It's usually a large open pit and, you know, that has a tremendous number of toxins coming out of it and very, very difficult control, particularly when you have a high rainfall and a high water table like in Alaska. And you know, what I would do is consult with the hunters, the fishermen, and the native corporations in the state. And I'm not against mineral development. I think we ought to develop our resources, but I don't want companies that can externalize their costs. In other words, that can take those costs, strip mine an area, poison it, and then leave with a lot of cash and not clean up their mess and leave the cause of that to generations. I believe in real, true free market capitalism, which means if you want to bring a product to market, you pay all the cost of getting it there, including the cost of cleaning up after yourself, which was a lesson that we were all supposed to have learned in kindergarten. But what you see with a lot of polluters is that they depend on subsidies. And, you know, environmental subsidies is a subsidy. If you can externalize the cost, if you can poison a community, a water table, a salmon run, and turn it liquidated for cash, and then, you know, stuff your pockets and leave that mess for generations, I've seen that again and again and again, and I don't think it's a good deal.
Okay, I want to give you a break because you've answered the question very forthrightly. I want to thank you for that. And I think you've also answered these other two questions several times when you said that the federal government should live up to its obligations. And Indian Health Services and VA services, medical reimbursements, you know, I don't know if their obligations have been met. These are things that I would not be the kind of person to ask you this question, but I was asked to bring that up. And if the Indian Health Services are not in full financial compliance, I presume you're going to take care of that as a president.
Yeah, absolutely. In fact, you know, last time I was up in Arctic Village, one of the chiefs up there said to me, he said, your uncle came through here, Ted Kennedy, on a dog sled in 1968 to do hearings on the Indian Health Service. And he said he did that because your father, my dad, had started that committee in the Senate to make sure the Indians were getting adequate health care and to create the Indian Health Services. And he died, and he was killed during the 68 campaign. And so Teddy, my uncle, his brother, was still in the Senate, took over his position on that committee, and he went up to Arctic Village to have hearings up there. So, yeah, that's an issue that I was raised with. It's been part of my my family, part of my heritage, and I will continue to fight that my father, my uncle, had to make sure that Indians get adequate health care. In terms of the veterans, we got a huge military budget. We're spending $1.3 trillion on the military now. And the only thing like, people get shortfall is veterans. And I'm going to make sure that doesn't happen. One of the things I find in Alaska has more veterans per capita than any other state.
That's correct. Mr. Kennedy, we're down to 2 minutes, so I'm going to ask you one last thing here. And then I would just like to speak to you briefly off the air when we do get interrupted for the news, because you've been wonderful. I want to thank you personally and ask you one last question when we get off the air. Ron Paul believed in strict construction of the Constitution versus loose or current interpretation. Now, I maintain that the Constitution is very clear about that as to personal liberty. It's loose as to government authority. It's very strict. I would like to know what your philosophy is, your constitutional philosophy.
I'm a constitutional absolutist. I think when it says free speech, it means free speech. There's certain speech that is illegal. You know, at pedophilia, for example, inciting directly inciting violence. That is unprotected speech. But all other speech, you know, the remedy for bad speech is not censorship, it's more speech. And I feel that way about all of our constitutional rights, that our country is about freedom, and that we need to guard it jealously. And we can't let, you know, anybody talk us out of our constitutional rights.
Mr. Kennedy, that music means we're going to be cut off in 45 seconds for the news. So I just want to make courtesies right now and thank you for giving us your time and talking 45 minutes straight. It was fantastic.
Well, I'm very, very grateful. I love Alaska. As I say, every chance I get, I go up there. Some of my favorite landscapes in the world, Southeast Alaska. There's nothing more beautiful on earth. The Sitka spruce, the cedar.
And thank you. We're going to be cut off.
I love it.
Mr. Kennedy, I'll speak to you very briefly off the air. Our guest has been Robert F. Kennedy, candidate for President of the United States, KSRM, Soldana Kinai Homer. It's 4 o'clock.